It's Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Gamley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. The Disability Rights Center in New Hampshire is investigating the state's disability care system following reporting from the New Hampshire Bulletin, which revealed systemic abuse and neglect there. I'm joined now by Bulletin reporter Will Skipworth, who has uncovered these allegations of abuse within the system. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
Well, can you remind us what you found in your reporting investigation into the state's intellectual and developmental disability care system?
Absolutely. So I'll start you off with a statistic. There were 467 credible reports of abuse, neglect, and exploitation in the state-funded system. And to be clear, that's instances where the state did an investigation and found that abuse, neglect, or exploitation did happen. And that's over the 2.5 years ending in June. During that time, there were also 119 deaths. I was able to speak to some of the people, some of the victims' families and some of the attorneys that represent them. And I found some really horrific stuff. You know, there was sexual abuse. There was people who were being physically beaten. There was a man who was found dead behind the care home he was living at.
So now the Disability Rights Center has launched their own investigation. What is the agency's role in that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Disability Rights Center is part of what's called the Federal Protection and Advocacy Network. So that is a federally designated system. So every state in the U.S. has an agency like that, that the federal government has designated to do investigations like this, to, you know, advocate on behalf of people with disabilities, sometimes pursue litigation on behalf of people with disabilities and do stuff of that sort.
And what are you hearing from lawmakers now about these patterns of abuse and neglect and now that this investigation has started?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm hearing a lot of lawmakers that are horrified. I'm hearing a lot of lawmakers that are shocked. You know, this has kind of been what I learned is shocking. So it's no surprise.
Have any lawmakers filed legislation, taken any other actions in response to these allegations of abuse?
Yeah, I haven't seen any legislation filed, but I've been told by my sources in the legislature that there are some state senators that are working on bills that they hope to late file for this session. We're getting pretty close to when the legislative session starts, but there's still a little bit of time for them to late file in the state Senate.
Now, obviously, this investigation is just getting going, but I'm wondering about, you know, possible solutions. But what are the roots of the problem that your reporting found?
Yeah, what I'm hearing over and over again is that there's a total lack of oversight. There's not much prevention. That, you know, when incidents happen, they didn't really like learn from the mistakes. You know, someone told me, you know, it doesn't matter how many incident reports you file after an accident or after an abuse, after a neglect, if you're not doing anything to correct what happened in that incident.
Yeah, no, I know we've talked about your reporting before here on the recap, and now we've got this investigation going. Do you have any idea of the timeline for that investigation?
Yeah. They guess that it could they could have a final report potentially in early summer, depending on, you know, what they find.
Let's turn to another story that you've been covering, Will. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act, so-called, from congressional Republicans this year, made some significant changes to Medicaid, but they need states like New Hampshire to figure out a system for implementing those changes. So what does this mean for Medicaid enrollees here in the state and around the country?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say the biggest one is the work requirement. So your listeners probably have heard this in the news. Medicaid is, under this bill, Medicaid is going to have a new 80-hour per month work requirement. So that means that you're going to have to prove to the government that you've been working 8 hours a month unless you have one of the exceptions to the rule to receive coverage.
What have state lawmakers been saying about this? How to you know, enforce these federal changes in the system?
Yeah, I mean, Republicans are embracing it, and then Democrats are kind of decrying it, and it's pretty party line. Right now, you know, they're debating, the state has to debate some details, and I'm one of them that are focused right now is whether they'll allow self-attestation, which means that the enrollee just tells the government, hey, I'm working, or documentary evidence, which means that they'll have to, you know, provide documentary evidence of that they're working. And, you know, Republicans who control both chambers of the legislature seem to be favoring the documentary evidence.
Now, in talking about work requirements, New Hampshire previously implemented work requirements in 2018, but then those efforts were paused. So what happens and how are lawmakers considering that recent history with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was back in 2018. The state legislature approved a work requirement But less than a month after it went into effect, the state reversed course. What was happening was only about 8,000 of the 25,000 people subject to requirement had filed out the necessary paperwork to prove it. And so then Governor Chris Sununu quickly intervened and paused the program before those people, the rest of the people, lost their coverage. And then, you know, Democrats really point to that as an evidence that, you know, the state isn't as ill-prepared to do the necessary bureaucracy to make this happen, and that these work requirements are only just going to kick people who are actually eligible for Medicaid off the program.
Yeah, what happens to those folks?
Yeah, so if they don't fill the paperwork, they lose their Medicaid coverage.
Now, Governor Ayotte also introduced statewide changes to Medicaid, including raising monthly fees for enrollees. How will that affect people on Medicaid when the insurance kicks in for, you know, the new year in 2026?
Yeah, absolutely. So the big one is these Medicaid premiums. Yeah, some families will have to pay up to $270 per month to receive coverage. And this is based on where they fall in relation to the poverty level. And so for reference, that means a family of three earning $59,962 a year, they're set to pay $233 under this when this new law goes into effect. And that's based on 2025's poverty level guidelines.
William Skipworth covers health for the New Hampshire Bulletin. I want to thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us this morning, Will.
Thank you so much for having me, Rick.
You can find more of his work, by the way, at NewHampshireBulletin.com. This is Morning Edition on NHPR, and we're recapping this week's news. What questions do you have about what's going on in the state? You can always email us at voices@nhpr.org. New Hampshire's had a tough housing market for decades with low supply and high demand. One common narrative that you might have heard to explain that shortage is that people from Massachusetts are moving up to New Hampshire and buying up housing stock. But a recent report from the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute says otherwise. NHPR reporter Kate Dario joins us now with more. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Rick.
We have this narrative that buyers from surrounding states are in part to blame for New Hampshire's housing shortage. What does this report actually say about it?
Yeah, so this report emphasizes that between 2018 and 2022, it was the majority of people buying homes in New Hampshire were people who already lived in New Hampshire. So that period encompasses the COVID-19 pandemic. And while there was an influx of people moving from out of state, those trends have generally cooled. And again, still, even then, the majority of people buying homes in New Hampshire were people from New Hampshire.
Now, we still do have quite a few people, though, settling here from Massachusetts. I have to admit, I did that myself about 25 years ago.
Yeah, so that really accelerated during COVID, but the latest data is suggesting that that's slowing down. New Hampshire actually loses about as many people to Maine as it gains from Massachusetts in recent years. So again, this larger issue can't be attributed to people from Massachusetts moving in. It really comes down to low supply and high demand, and most of that demand is coming from people who already live here.
What are some of the takeaways from this report, Kate?
Yeah, so you hear a lot about how New Hampshire has one of the oldest populations in the country, and that is true. But what's interesting is that the majority of people, in fact, more than three quarters of the people moving here in recent years have been under the age of 45. And a lot of those people are young families, so a lot of those people are children. And this is really important because the state relies, since about 2017, on in-migration for its population growth, and this matters for its economic health and future.
Well, it seems to me that would bode well, then, for New Hampshire's future. New Hampshire has seen severe drought conditions, Kate, over the last few months, something that I know that you've been following as well. The state saw its first winter storm of the season this week. Now that we got some snow on the ground, are drought conditions better?
This storm helped improve conditions marginally, but the majority of the state is still in what is considered a severe drought. And that's just because the soils have been so dry and the groundwater is so depleted that we need a lot more precipitation than we've been getting to solve this problem.
So what happens if these drought conditions continue through the winter? How does that affect people, you know, right here in New Hampshire? And what does that mean for spring?
Yeah, so there's this interesting relationship at play, which is basically if the ground freezes everywhere before the drought is resolved, which experts say really isn't an if at this point, but it's basically guaranteed, especially as temperatures are dropping this week. And again, how severe the drought is. Basically, what that means is that the conditions are sort of locked into the soil. So let's say the ground freezes and then you have the whole winter. It doesn't matter if there's a lot of snow or rain or sleet throughout the winter, because the ground is frozen, that precipitation won't be able to penetrate the soil and refill aquifers. And basically, that means that the drought will be in place once the ground starts to thaw in the spring. So that will just exacerbate a lot of the problems that we've been seeing with the drought. You know, that could mean that it's a really hard growing season for farmers. That could mean that homeowners who have dug wells, they're going to continue having to either, you know, bring in people to drill deeper wells or have to haul in water, which is expensive and time consuming. So this problem could just persist and deepen as we go into winter and the ground is going to freeze across the state.
Now, on the plus side, you did report this week that local Christmas tree farms are doing okay despite the drought. Is that true?
Yeah, that actually really surprised me, because I spent a lot of this fall hearing about how the foliage was really underwhelming because of the drought. So I just assumed that Christmas trees would be equally impacted in a negative way. But actually, what I learned from speaking with foresters is that Christmas trees are evergreens, which are a different type of tree than hardwoods like maple or beech trees, you know, the trees that give us really pretty colors in the fall. So evergreens enter their dormancy period. That's basically when they stop needing to take a lot of water from the soil, earlier than hardwoods. For evergreens in New Hampshire, that happens around August, and that was still relatively early in the drought here. So basically, they weren't as impacted by the deepening drought in later August, September. So they were able to be relatively normal given the conditions and avoid the more severe damage that hardwood saw. A farmer I spoke with did say that her trees were a little bit more dry and a little bit more yellow than normal, but generally they avoided the worst parts of the drought.
Some good news there.
Some good news.
NHPR's Kate Dario, thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks so much, Rick.
You can find more of her reporting, by the way, at nhpr.org. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.